the scriptures call it the feast. It's when everything in your life, it's what everything that is going on in the universe focuses on. And it's the idea that you will burn your house, that you will take that booth that you've lived in and you will throw it in the fire, that you're willing to take that paradise apple, that the judgments that you make for yourself, whether something is good or evil, and to smash it at the base of the altar, and that you're literally, by the psalms that you read and the readings that you're making, you're praying for the end of the world. And it's a sober, sober thing. It's not a light matter. It's not, well, we're going to go have a party. The reason it isn't is because the governor of the feast has to make some hard things. You have to do some hard sayings. And you have to, if the person comes to the feast without the right garment on, they're excluded from the feast. Well, to be excluded from the Feast of Tabernacles is like, it's bad news. Now, in my mind, I've set as tomorrow I have to decide whether or not we're going to have a feast. Now, people can say, well, who in the hell does he think he is making that judgment, taking that upon himself? Or what right does he have to say who can come to the feast or not? The 7 days of the feast are what's typified between now and the time we go up there. The 7 days. Everybody's invited to the party. Even the Levites, even the strangers, even the fatherless, the widows, the homeless. Everybody's invited. But on that evening of the eighth day, when the evening of the last of the seventh day, the beginning of the eighth day, it doesn't matter. I mean, it doesn't matter if there are three left. Do you understand? From God's standpoint. God doesn't care about numbers. He cares about obedience. He cares about what I wrote in that memo about whether or not you are surrendered to the Father. Or whether or not you've got all kinds of little gimmicks that you have to work out for your own self. If you think that you have something that you need to work out, you are in the wrong place. Now, it's an act of mercy, believe it or not, to delay to see whether or not we're going to have the feast. Let's read Matthew 22, and we'll see. And then I'll say, does anybody have anything to talk about? I don't really care about whatever anybody has to talk about right now. There's two versions of the marriage supper parable. One is in Matthew, it's the same parable, but in Matthew, the emphasis on is in verse 12, Matthew 22, 12, where he says, "Friend, how comest thou in here not having a wedding garment?" And he was speechless. Now, the only one at the final that has the right to do that is God, obviously. My job is to try to put you in the position where there's no time left, and so that you would see, so that you wouldn't be speechless if the Father came up to you and said, "You don't have on the right garment." You understand? So we try to duplicate what it would be like at that moment. Some of you don't like that very much. You don't like removing time from the equation of your life, because as long as you have time in the equation of your life, it can justify all of your sloth and all of your disobedience and all of your ignorance and all of your whoredoms and all of your idolatries. As long as you have time in the equation, a preacher's job is to remove time from your life. Preachers aren't very popular then. If they're preaching. So the emphasis here in Matthew's rendition of the great parable of the marriage supper is whether or not you have on the right garment. Now, Luke's rendition is a little different. Luke's emphasis, let's go to Luke 14, and we're going to read Luke's. Luke's emphasis is on none of the people that were invited or bidden are going to end up being there. That kind of... Well, let's look and see what he says. Verse 15. Do you understand that there is absolutely no justification for not being in a state of readiness at every instant? Not if you lose your fingers, not if you're pregnant, not if you're going to the hospital. There is no justification, not if you're in dire pain, not if you had a bad day, not if you have PMS. There's no justification spiritually for not being in a state of instant readiness and instant obedience. Verse 12, it says, and he said unto him that bade him, when thou makest a dinner or a supper, call not thy friends, nor thy brethren, and neither thy kinsmen, nor thy rich neighbors, lest they also bid thee again, and a recompense be made thee. But when thou makest a feast, call the poor, the maimed, the lame, and the blind, and thou shalt be blessed, for they cannot recompense you. For thou shalt be recompensed at the resurrection of the just. I mean, that still's got to hurt somebody. It hurts me. I don't want to invite all these idiots to some...
Kind of disturbed me reading that. That's us anyway.
Oh, no, that's what you can always say. I mean, Harry took care of the maimed part.
Most of us are poor. Tim's blind.
You got the lame.
I got the lame.
They were covered.
Ed's got the blind.
It's bland.
And when one of them that sat at meat with him heard these things, he said unto him, blessed is he that shall eat bread in the kingdom of God. Then said he unto him, a certain man made a great supper and bade many, and sent his servants at supper time to say to them that were bidden, come, for all things are now ready. And remember, the book of Revelation was written 2,000 years ago. And in the book of Revelation, verse 19, it says, all things are ready. You understand that? For the marriage supper. So that's the supper they're talking about. We got that one? This isn't like... Yeah, this isn't come have lunch with me at the lair or something. I mean, this is... Come for all... No, you can't say Taco Bell. Come, for all things are now ready. And they all, with one consent, begin to make excuse. The first Sunday am I have bought a piece of ground, and I must needs go and see it. I pray thee, have me excused. And another said, I have bought 5 yoke of oxen, and I go to test them. I pray thee, have me excused. And another said, I have married a wife, and therefore I cannot come. So that servant came and showed his lord these things. Then the master of the house, being angry, said to his servant, go out quickly into the streets and lanes of the city and bring in here the poor and the maimed and the halt and the blind. And the servant said, Lord, it is done as thou hast commanded, and yet there is room. And the Lord said unto the servant, go out into the highways and the hedges and compel them to come in, that my house may be filled. For I say unto you that none of those men which were bidden shall taste of my supper. Now, there's no such thing as a difference in time about being called to be a disciple and being called to this marriage, wedding supper. Do you understand? They're one and the same call. There's no time delay. Well, you got to go through basic training for 6 weeks or 6 months or 6 years or 15 years. It's the same instant call. Compel them to come in. All things are ready. It's only grace that says, since you've received the word, or since you heard, it's only grace, God's grace, that has said, I'm delaying the call. Why is he delaying it? Because you have oxen to prove. You have had wives to marry. You've had things to do. Besides that, you've had to build your own little houses. You've had your own trips, your own, you've had your own agendas. There is no agenda that you can have and be ready to go into the eighth day. There's no agenda that you can have and be ready to go to the marriage supper. One of the great agendas that you have is, well, I'm getting better. I don't do that anymore. Do you see how that's an agenda? Because it implies the passage of time. It is the opposite of the redeeming of the time. To redeem the time means that you see that there is no time. Then he says some stuff here. He says, in verse 26, he says, if any man come to me and hate not. In other words, if any man come at the instant that he's called by Jesus or by the Holy Spirit, and at that instant does not, because at that instant he's being invited to the marriage supper. You understand? If any man come to me and hate not his father and mother and wife and children and brothers and sisters, yea, and his own life also, he cannot be my disciple. Okay, now, to hate here means to divorce. I mean, it's the idea of what you've done with, some of you had several wives. It's what you've done, it's about as much breath as you give to the least favorite of your ex-wives or husbands. You understand that? It's to divorce it. Well, if it's not, it's, let's say your least favorite ex-boyfriend or girlfriend, if you haven't had the pleasure of matrimony before. However, in here, that's pretty rare, isn't it? It's a total divorce. Do you understand the implications of what it means to divorce your life? Divorce yourself. Whosoever doth not bear his cross and come after me cannot be my disciple. And which of you, intending to build a tower, sitteth not down first and counteth the cost, whether he have sufficient to finish it? Lest haply after he hath laid the foundation, is not able to finish it, all that behold it begin to mock him, saying, this man began to build and wasn't able to finish. I mean, how many times have you done that?
Thousands.
Well, but that's not good enough anymore. If you have a propensity that you believe that you will do that again, then you cannot partake of the Feast of Tabernacles. I've told you all, you know, I've told you all 100 times, 1,000 times, 100,000 times, when you walk through that door, you leave your life outside. It never does any good. It's become a cliche. You divorce yourself. Or what king going to make war against another king sitteth not down first and consulteth whether he be able with 10,000 to meet him that cometh against him with 20,000. Remember, remember what happened to this? There were 12 spies that were sent into the land. What happened to 10 of them? They got dusted. Why? Because they came back and said how difficult the walk was. Only Caleb and Joshua rested. So likewise, whosoever he be of you that forsaketh not all that he hath cannot be my disciple. That is the second least studied scripture in the Bible. Salt is good, but if the salt have lost its savor, wherewith shall it be seasoned? It is neither fit for the land, nor yet for the dunghill, that men cast it out. He that hath ears to hear, let him hear. For some of you have been here long enough, you know that you're no longer even good for the world. There's no nothing. There's no place. You're in this terrible, terrible middle ground of being not good for God and not good for the world, not good for yourself. And yet you sit around and contemplate yourself. You contemplate your options, your idiotic agendas. And you say, why do I come to this place and hear that idiot yell at me? He that hath ears to hear, let him hear. The end is a whole lot nearer than when we first believed. Time, I mean, you can, it's in the air.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Time is about to end. I want to hasten its coming. By our obedience. I want to open the seven seals of the ark. I want us to pray, and I want us to read the psalms that were offered during the drink offering. You know what the drink offering is? There's seven psalms that were read during the 7 days of the feast. And they took and they did this great, wonderful sermon. They ran, they got down a golden pitcher, and they took water, and they poured it into one end of the altar. And while they were pouring the water into one end, there was another little priest guy that was pouring wine into the other side of the altar. And the first day, they read a particular psalm while that was happening. Second day, another psalm. Third day, another psalm. Fourth day, another psalm. On the eighth day, they only poured wine into the altar. And another psalm was read. But each of those psalms are praying for the destruction of time and space. When Jesus turned the water into wine, he did it on the Feast of Tabernacles, signifying that the end was then. Do you understand? They were in there pouring wine and water. He went into the wedding that was taking place on the Feast of Tabernacles on that eighth day of the feast, and he, while they were doing this number with a little symbolism back at the altar place, the temple place, the God place, he was out in Cana, and he was showing the true meaning. He was turning the water into wine. It was his first miracle, allegedly. But I want you to know that all the water has just about been turned into wine in here. You don't have any more excuses. This is what Jesus said around this time of the feast about Jerusalem, the city where the temple of the Holy Temple was, and all it was the best that man could be. Certain of the Pharisees saying unto him, Get thee out and depart hence, for Herod will kill you. And he said unto them, Go ye and tell that fox, Behold, I cast out demons, and I do cures today and tomorrow, and the third day I shall be perfected. Nevertheless, I must walk today and tomorrow for the day and the day following, for it cannot be that a prophet perish out of Jerusalem. It's not a prophet, it's the prophet. O Jerusalem, 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 which killeth the prophets and stonest them that are sent unto thee, how often would I have gathered thy children together as a hen doth gather her brood under her wings, and you would not? Now behold, your temple or house is left unto you desolate. And verily I say unto you, you shall not see me until the time come when you shall say, Blessed is he that cometh in the name of the Lord. I beg of you, put aside your agendas. If you don't and cannot put aside your agenda, then let's talk about it. Openly contend. Produce your strong cause. Now, does anybody have anything to talk about? This isn't what we're going to talk about. Now see, you can go to one of these other groups, and sometimes they spend the whole Bible study talking about their problems. You either put them aside, you put all of your agendas, you see that there is no such thing as a problem, or you dwell in it. You be consumed by it. Does anybody have anything to talk about? For your information, Luke 9:51 through Luke 17:10 all came to pass. All was attended to the Feast of Tabernacles. John 7:8 and 9 was all Feast of Tabernacles. And that's enough. I mean, just if you want to.
John 7:8-9.
John 7:8-9, Luke, essentially 9 through 17. 30% of the Gospels and the New Testament was about the Feast of Tabernacles. But nobody knows it. Because it's, you know, they've lost the mystery of what happened during those days. We're in the book of Ecclesiastes. There are five scrolls in the ancient Bible, in the ancient Torah, or the ancient, what Jesus considered scripture. There are five scrolls in that are called the Megillah. And the Megillah is made up of five, what we now have as books of the Bible. It's Esther, Ruth, come on, you Bible scholars. Esther, Ruth.
Talk Nass. Jonah. Micah.
Five.
Hosea.
It's called the Megillah, and it's what now?
It's made up of five scrolls, or five books of our Bible, that are not the prophets.
Probably Ecclesiastes.
Ecclesiastes. Esther, Ruth. Esther, Ruth. Listen to me. It's Proverbs, Esther, Ruth. Ecclesiastes, Song of Solomon.
Song of Solomon.
Okay? Now, those are read at only specific occasions. They're not read at random, whenever you feel like reading. They're read in relationship to what Not Proverbs, Lamentations. Proverbs isn't read in the Megillah. Who said that?
We were just checking, you know, we were just using the test.
To see if you would catch it.
Each of the five books, each of the Megillah, are read in a particular time. Now, for those of you who remember, the only time the book of Proverbs is read is it's what's taught, it's memorized to the kids between the ages of 4 and 7. Every Hebrew child, if he's in now, not now, but then, every Hebrew child that was 7 years old could memorize, could repeat the book of Proverbs. At 7 years old, they begin studying and memorizing the book of what? Seven.
Proverbs.
At 7 years old, they begin studying and memorizing and understanding what the meaning of the book of Leviticus. At 12 years old, from 7 until 12, they memorized and understood every element of the book of Leviticus.
It's hard for you to fathom kids.
Yeah.
That age
you
did it.
Well, they were different kids.
They
didn't have TV.
At 12 years old, then, approximately, but when the rabbi said it, they became a child of the law. That means they totally understood the law. It's what modern versions call the bar mitzvah, or for the women, the beth mitzvah. Okay, so when Jesus was in the temple talking to the elders, he was there, the rabbi, the elder, was saying he's bar mitzvah. He then became a child of the law. Now, the book of Esther is read when? The book of Ruth is read when?
Pentecost.
Okay, the book of Lamentations is read? Fast of Ab. The Song of Solomon is read at the
7 days.
At the Sabbath, the intervening Sabbath on Passover. And the book of Ecclesiastes is read the seventh day, only one time, the seventh day of the Feast of Tabernacles. It's what's necessary. You have to understand the book of Tabernacles before you can celebrate the eighth day of the feast. Understand? Where are you? What's going on with you?
I'm just...
pretty weird. What's going on?
Oh, I'm not weird. I'm very tired. I have a lot of pain in my hand. And it's like you're asking all these questions. And as you're asking them, I mean, I knew the answers to those questions at one time. I can barely relate to the question.
All right. Everybody at Ecclesiastes? The words of the preacher, the son of David, king in Jerusalem... Vanity of vanities, saith the preacher, vanity of vanities, all is vanity. There's unlimited stuff written about that second verse. If you'll notice, there's one vanity, and then two vanities, that's three. And then one vanity is four, and then two more vanities is six, and then one more vanity is seven. So there are seven vanities. The word vanity is mentioned, according to the scholar, seven times.
Oh, because two of them are plural?
Yeah, and the way that they're mentioned, the two, the plural ones mean there's two, it means two in the Hebrew. The seven mentioned correspond to the seven worlds which a man beholds. From birth to about 1 year old.
The senses.
No, they're not seven senses.
Hold on, corresponds to the seven senses.
No, the first world that man beholds, or the human.
What?
He's from birth till the first
Make
year. He's like a king. He's seated in a canopied litter, fondled and kissed and cooed at by all.
Yeah.
Everybody, somebody meets his every demand. He's like a king.
What?
At 2 to 3, however, the next stage, the second stage, He's like a little pig. He sticks his hand in the feeding trough, sticks everything in the feeding trough, and he's insatiable in his demands. At 10, he skips and plays like a kid. Goat, the kid of the goats. Just running and skipping and playing. At 20, he's like a neighing horse ruled by his passion. At 30, having married, he's like an ass, a beast of burden. With children, he's like a mad dog grown brazen to supply the food and their wants. Then when old, he's bent over like an ape. And those are the seven stages of a human being. Now, what has been said holds true for the ignorant. But for those versed in Torah, like David. Now, King David was old. Although he was old, he was still a king, as in the first verse. Understand? Now, the seven also means, it's interesting, the seven vanities there also correspond to the 7 days of creation. On the first day, in the beginning, God created the heaven and the earth, but the heaven shall vanish away like smoke, and the earth shall wax old like a garment. On the second day, let there be a firmament. Let there be a firmament, but the firmament shall be rolled, or the heaven shall be rolled together like a scroll in Isaiah 34. The third day, let the waters under the heaven be gathered together, but the Lord shall utterly destroy the sea, in Isaiah 11. The fourth day, let there be lights in the firmament of the heaven. But, according to Isaiah, the moon shall be confounded and the sun shall be ashamed. What? The fifth day, let the waters swarm with swarms of living creatures. But, I will consume the fowls of the heaven and the fishes of the sea, according to Zephaniah. On the sixth day, let us make man in our image. But, according to Zephaniah, I will cut off man from off the face of the earth. On the seventh day, and God blessed the seventh day and sanctified it. But, everyone that profaneth the Sabbath shall surely be put to death. Now, what does that mean? What does that have to do with us?
It means you don't rest.
The world thinks that the Sabbath, the seven, the Sabbath is the perfect number. Even the religious numerological world believes that seven is the perfection. Seven is the rest. Seven is where you want to be. That's not the truth. Eight is where we want to be. But you can't get to eight, the resurrection, without being in a state of rest. And the seventh, total rest. You have to be willing to let be what is. Today, in order that the resurrection can take place by the power of God. Spiritually, the only time the Sabbath day was fulfilled, was by Christ in the grave. So his resurrection was the eighth. Okay, do you understand that? So that's why on the seventh day of the Feast of Tabernacles, we read Ecclesiastes. You cannot rest as long as you believe that one of those seven isn't vanity. There's something around here that you don't think is vanity. Otherwise, you'd be in a state of rest. What is it that you don't think is vanity? What is it that isn't vain? What is it in your life that isn't fruitless? That's where you can't rest. That's where you're believing the lie. That's where there can be no resurrection because there can be no rest. Therefore, the Feast of Tabernacles is a meaningless thing. Seven vanities in that second verse. One vanity for each of the 7 days. One vanity for each of the element of linear time. Each of the elements of linear time. What is it that you don't think is vain? That's what we have to address between now and Tabernacles.
Where is that in Zephaniah that you just read?
Which one? There's two of them. Zephaniah 1:3. That's where we get the idea of hot seats, by the way, or I did, from Zephaniah. Zephaniah means, the word Zephaniah means hidden of God. When Adam, the first man, when Adam perceived and saw through the veil and saw the excellence of the seventh day or the Sabbath, Adam wrote the 92nd Psalm.
Can we read that?
So let's go there.
You know, only hit. What really sticks out of my mind is what you said more about the highest thing, you know, the culmination of all reason and knowledge and intelligence is.
Your sin is as scarlet.
Which means you're vain. You can't make it.
Vain means doesn't. Oh, I like to look at myself in the mirror. That's not what vain means. Vain means fruitless, without function, without purpose.
No value.
Okay, it is a good thing to give thanks unto the Lord, and to sing praises unto thy name, O Most High. To show forth thy loving kindness in the morning. To show forth means to let be seen. It means to show forth the sun. That's what it means, the bottom line. To show forth Christ. And thy faithfulness every night, upon an instrument of 10 strings, and upon the psaltery, upon the harp, with a solemn sound, or a deep tone. For thou, Lord, hast made me glad through thy work. I will triumph in the works of thy hand. O Lord, how great are thy works, and thy thoughts are very deep. A brutish man knoweth not. You know what a brutish man is?
One who follows his own.
That's the one who thinks that there are 7 senses.
Yeah. Our elder's taking some rest.
Why do I get the feeling that this is never going to go away?
What? The 7 senses?
An erroneous comment that I made earlier.
What?
It's a sense of smell, sense of taste, sense of feel.
Sense
of motion, sense of time.
O Lord, how great are thy works, thy thoughts are very deep. A brutish man knoweth not, neither doth a fool understand this. When the wicked spring as the grass, or spring up as the grass, and when all the workers of iniquity do flourish. Remember again, you got to remember, you got to hear this, you'll never read the Bible right. Iniquity is the word avon, and it means self-seeking. It means trying to save your ass, trying to save yourself, trying to do something good for you. When all the workers of iniquity do flourish, it is that they shall be destroyed forever. But thou, Lord, art most high forevermore. For lo, thine enemies, O Lord, for lo, thine enemies shall perish. All the workers of iniquity shall be scattered. My horn shall thou exalt like the horn of a unicorn. You know what that means? There was no, in ancient legends and myth, there was nothing more powerful than the horn of the unicorn. It was like the rarest thing in the universe, and it was the most powerful thing. It was the strongest magic. I shall be anointed with fresh oil. Every time you see the word anoint in the Old Testament, just say Christed, Messiah. It's the word for Messiah. It's Hamashiach. It means to anoint or to Christ. Put on the Lord Jesus Christ. I shall be anointed with fresh oil. Mine eye also shall see my desire on mine enemies. Mine ear shall hear my desire of the wicked that rise up against me. The righteous shall flourish like the palm tree. He shall grow like a cedar in Lebanon. Those that be planted in the house of the Lord shall flourish in the courts of our God. They shall still bring forth fruit in old age. They shall be fat and flourishing. To show that the Lord is upright, he is my rock. There is no unrighteousness in him. I think it's neat that all the ancients believed that Adam wrote that. Just before he fell. And his eyes were holding, he saw nothing. What?
How come God decided to erase unicorns?
Well, I don't know that there ever was a unicorn. I don't think there ever was one. It was always a symbol it was always a symbol of that which was perfect and right and true and it's a symbol of Christ. It's a Yeah, it's a good one.
Mystical.
Mystical.
And there's no Santa Claus.
Okay, back to wherever we were just.
Where are we going?
Mystical.
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 Back to Ecclesiastes. What profit hath a man of all his labor which he taketh or performeth under the sun? One generation passeth away, another generation cometh, but the earth abideth forever. Do you understand that forever means as long as there is time? You got that? Okay. Because if there's no time, there can't be a forever.
Then eternity means after forever.
Hmm?
Eternity means after forever. Now, what were you saying? Because I was turning the page. About forever?
The word forever. Or forever, when it says things like the earth exists forever and the lake of hell, of fire and brimstone exists forever, that, they only exist as long as there's time.
Or observe this feast forever.
Observe the feast forever. All right. The sun also ariseth, and the sun goeth down and hasteth to his place where he arose. The wind goeth toward the south and turneth about unto the north, it whirleth about continually, and the wind returneth again according to his circuits. All the rivers run into the sea, yet the sea is not full. Unto the place from whence the rivers come, there they return again. All things are full of weariness or labor. Man cannot utter it. The eye is not satisfied with seeing, nor the ear filled with hearing. The thing that hath been, it is that which shall be, and that which is done is that which shall be done. There is no new thing under the sun. Is there anything whereof it may be said, see, this is new? It hath been already of old time which was before us. There is no remembrance of former things, neither shall there be any remembrance of things that come, that are to come, with those that shall come after. I, the preacher, was king over Israel and Jerusalem. And I gave my heart to seek and to search out by wisdom concerning all things that are done under heaven. This sore travail hath God given to the sons of man to be exercised therewith. What sore travail?
Find out. Search.
The search. There's no suffering greater than that which is caused by the doubts of those who want to believe. Physical pain is meaningless compared to the suffering that's caused by the doubts of those that want to believe. It's in the ancient times, and the writers like William Blake, they called it being chased by the hounds of heaven. The sore travail. You go through life, and for years and years you try to ignore that chase, that search. And then all of a sudden, it up and bites you. And it's to all men. Now, one rabbi related the verse to the prophets and to the writings, the sore travail. For if Israel had been worthy, they would have only had the Torah. You understand? But it's sore travail for the prophets and the writings because they all came to talk against vanity and to idolatry. You understand? Most of the writings of the prophets, or all of the writings of the prophets, and most of the writings are rebukes. Now, I don't know why this is. I don't know why I made this note here, but it's a reference was made to Numbers 32:1, verse the sore travail. It's behold, the place was a place for cattle, and they talked a great deal in the Midrash about the human race being like cattle, and the the travail of that position. But anyway, the pasture was not less than 16 miles from the next community. In other words, it couldn't be 15 miles. So the cattle would not unlawfully devour the produce of its neighbors. Now, this is something different than a Sabbath day's journey. If we didn't suffer the sin of Nimrod, we just studied that, to gather the centralization of people, then the walled cities where we just lived and we had to produce our own, then we should be no more than 16 miles. I mean, no less than 16 miles apart from each other, so that you wouldn't try to eat the pasture or the. You wouldn't try to consume somebody else's, you wouldn't try to eat someone else's flesh. You would find rejoicing in yourself or you would die. Do you understand? You would have the sustenance where you were without eating someone else's flesh. Even if you're a mother with a child, you had to be 16 miles apart. That's other one, and until, you know, once the kid became a child of the law. Is that too esoteric, or do you understand what I'm saying?
Is that just like a thought, or is that the way it, like, should be? I mean, it destroys the idea of minion. It destroys the idea of community.
But so it's...
It's the
only way that you will really understand by your own self that all is vanity.
Well, if the type
otherwise
is...
Otherwise you spend the 7 days eating flesh.
Well, but I'm the type of a baby, is that's what a baby does. A young child eats his mother's flesh, basically, in milk. You know, this is our mother. I mean, when the time comes and we're not children anymore, we will have our own children.
Okay.
And it will be a new thing.
I've seen all the works that are done under the sun, and behold, all is vanity and vexation of spirit. What vexation of spirit means, literally, striving after wind. It means to try to catch wind. You remember when you look, I used to do that all the time. I figured if I got a big enough bag, I'd catch the wind. Never once worked. All is vanity and vexation of spirit. may be likened to an old man sitting at a crossroad. Before him were two paths. One was even at the beginning, but thorns at the end. The other was thorns at the beginning, but even and smooth at the end. And the old man sits there. The preacher sits there and tells all who come by, this is those two paths, which one are you going to choose? If you choose the one that says it's thorns at the beginning, and rough and hilly and terrible rocky, but then even at the end, then you choose the way of the Spirit. If you choose the other one, which all flesh tries to choose, and that's the one that seems good unto man, there's a way that seems good unto man. That you can't believe that you wouldn't. But at the end, when you're without strength, then you have to go through the mountains and the rigor and the. Okay? Verse 15, that which is crooked cannot be made straight. That which is wanting or lacking cannot be numbered. This is likened to the solar year and the lunar year. The lunar year has 11 days less than the solar year. God says, or the rabbis say, originally the moon was the same size as the sun. And at the fall, the moon came in and became the little teeny orbit. And so ever since then, the lunar year has been trying to overtake the solar year. And it's always 11 days behind. It says, how many days and cycles and years has there been without the lunar overtaking the solar? That which is crooked cannot be made straight. That which is lacking cannot be numbered. Your attempts by your own understanding to gain rest and peace, your attempts to gain what you think you want by your senses and by your mind is the same attempt. It's as vain as the lunar year trying to catch up with the solar year. It cannot be done. That's why in numerology, 7 is the number of perfect according to the senses. And 6 is the number of man. The number of man, the best man can be, is 666. You can never be at rest. You can never find peace without dying, without the cross, without surrendering.
That's a strange idea in math, the repeating number.
Irrational. Is it an irrational number?
Is it irrational?
Well.
Repeating or whatever. It's a spiritual thing. When I was in school, I never could quite grasp the concept of no matter how many times you divide it, and all you know is the remainder of 6. So
that's
what
it
feels like, too. The remainder.
Yeah, it's always 6.
Always 6. 6, 6, 6, 6, 6, 6, 6, 6, 6, 6. That's why the number, I mean, again, that's why it's the number of man. His number is 6666. That which is lacking cannot be numbered. I commune with mine own heart, saying, lo, I am come to great estate, and have gotten more wisdom than all they that have been before me in Jerusalem. Yea, my heart had great experience of wisdom and knowledge. And I gave my heart to know wisdom, and to know madness and folly. I perceived that this is also vexation of spirit. For in much wisdom is much grief. And he that increaseth knowledge increaseth sorrow. The rabbis have a saying, according to the camel, so the load. Jesus said, to whom much has been given, much shall be required. According to the camel, so the load. Amen? That's enough. I don't feel like talking anymore. Okay. Take it, big guy.